Blue in Chicago and Other Stories by Bette Howland. Read by Bernadette Dunn.
A Visit. I was driving an expressway through a large city. Interchanges, on-off ramps, bridges, underpasses. Traffic glittered, roadwork stretched ahead forever. I kept heading the wrong way. You know how it is, the wrong lane, the wrong turn, and you're stuck. Nothing to do but just keep going on and on until the next exit. By now it was getting dark, and the going was getting rougher. Flags, flares, sandbags, barricades. Not only was I lost, I was on a road not open. No road at all. A tunnel of rocks and mud closed for repairs. That's why there were no more cars. Other drivers knew about the mess and the construction work and had taken the detours. But someone else must have been in the same fix because out of nowhere, a car came barreling past, exhaust glowing red in the taillights. I was almost expecting it, the skid, the screech, the crash and scream of metal and glass. Don't stop. That's what they tell you. Drive. Drive even if you get a flat tire. If you break down, never get out of the car. It was night. It was no man's land. Nothing around but burned out buildings, black windows, brick walls scaled by steely vines of razor wire. On the smoking air drifted the distant whistles of sirens. Still, I guess I stopped and got out anyhow, because the next thing I knew, I was on foot, picking my way clumsily over the rubble. My head felt fuzzy, and my arm was smarting. Sticky. Oh, I thought. What if it was me? I bet it was me. I must be the one in that wreck back there. That made sense. I don't see well at night, and I was driving too fast. I do now, you know, ever since I noticed that cops don't stop gray-haired ladies in pickup trucks. So no wonder. This was one of those good news and bad news situations. I was lucky, shaken up maybe, but scarcely hurt, hardly a scratch. By now, the accident seemed to be the least of my worries. Because here I was, all alone, no one else in sight. Who else would be dumb enough to take a road that was closed? And not so sure I should hope for anyone to show up, either. Whoever did might not be coming to the rescue. It was a pretty scary place, all right. The sort of place you have nightmares about. An underpass, I had thought at first. But now I saw I was underground. A subway tunnel. And stumbling along tracks toward the station. Closed for repairs. No passengers, no turnstiles, no ticket takers. Planks laid across the potholed platforms. Crumbling ceilings, broken stairs. At the entrance, a makeshift door. Either the glass was very dirty or... Yes, it wasn't glass. It was that plastic stuff they staple over window frames for weatherproofing. That's why it was so hard to see through. You may be sure I was watching. And sure enough, someone was coming. Through the plastic film, the effect was of a form materializing. A uniform, stout, a badge on the chest. Then the door swung open. The man stepped quickly down the planks, and I saw he wasn't as big as I had thought, though big enough. And not in uniform. No badge, only a trench coat. Still, he had the manner of a man with a badge on his chest. A lot of shirt front, thrusting buttons, the brisk, pointy gray beard, the bristling gray hair, the neck, short, rigid under the collar. He wore horn-rimmed glasses, angled, tilted, Harlequin style, and under his elbow he clutched a portfolio, tightly, possessively, the way a woman might clutch a purse. "The Russians," he said. "The Russians are driving me crazy." Now that seemed strange, because he looked Russian to me. Maybe it was the glint of the glasses that gave his face such an Asiatic slant. His temples were polished and